Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, you know, Florida boasts having some of the most transparent government laws. Our sunshine laws clearly state that most activity done by our elected officials and local governments is accessible by its citizens. Now, what do you know about the sunshine laws and the access that you're allowed to have? We're joined now by the president of the First Amendment Foundation, Barbara Peterson. Barbara, great to have you back.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Also, I just want to mention that the First Amendment Foundation is going to be hosting events around the state around sunshine laws, including one at the Sun Sentinel this Wednesday, and it is open to the public. Barbara, let's start with this. Florida sunshine laws. Just remind us real quickly what those are.
Well, we have both a right of access to government meetings. That's commonly referred to as the Sunshine Law. That law says that any discussion of public business between two or more members of the same board or commission must be opened and noticed to the public unless there is a specific legal exception that would allow them to close the meeting. Now, public records law, go ahead.
No. Keep going.
Our public records law is very broad. Any document in any form, that's a text message, it could be a Facebook post, it could be an email, any record relating to public business, as a rule, must be provided to the public upon request. There will be some information in those records that might be deleted or redacted because of an exemption. But it's a very broad public records law also.
Yeah. Now, this series of these seminars that you're holding, and you have this one coming up at the Sun Sentinel again in Broward County on Wednesday. Who's going to be in attendance? What are these seminars about?
Well, the seminars are meant to inform people about the requirements, the rights, and the responsibilities under our open government laws. In our audience, we've been doing these since 1995. Our audience is generally made up of government officials. I wish more of them would come, elected and appointed public officials, government employees, members of the media, and citizens. So it's a pretty broad group, and we try to both cover the basics of the Sunshine Law and the Public Records Law, and then go into depth and answer more people's questions, specific questions about requests they've received or their attempts to attend a school board meeting. So it's pretty good in-depth seminar ranges. It lasts about 3 hours, and the cost is really reasonable too. So people get a really good understanding of the open government laws, the requirements of the laws from these seminars.
So, you know, what makes Florida's Sunshine Law interesting compared to and unique compared to other states?
Oh, it's one of the oldest. We have one of the oldest laws in the country. Our public records law was codified in 1909. Our open meetings law was enacted in 1968. And then we also are one of only six states in the country that have a specific constitutional right of access to the records and meetings of our government. So the constitutional right of access is pretty spectacular. And what is really important is in Florida, a custodian of public records can deny your public records request, or the school board can deny your participation in a school board meeting only if they have specific statutory authority. Only the legislature can create exceptions to our law, which means there's no balancing of interests by local government or state government.
They have passed different rules, exceptions, even recently. Yeah, let's look at some interesting Sunshine Law cases that are in play right now. And let's start with Parkland. The press, parents, others have asked for different information from the school district and from the sheriff on the Parkland shooting. According to the law, how much information are the citizens allowed to have access to in a case like that?
There's quite a bit, actually. Any investigations, investigative records into the shooting, to the shooter, to the people, the law enforcement officers and their reaction to the shooting, investigative records, both internal investigations and criminal investigations, those records are exempt from disclosure, but only so long as the investigation is active. Once the investigation is closed, most of those records will become subject to public disclosure. There might be some information, again, that's exempt. One of the big issues right after the shooting was the reaction of law enforcement. There were allegations between law enforcement agencies that some did their jobs better than others. There was the allegation that the school resource officer had not engaged the shooter. And how do we make sense? How do we as the public make sense? Who's telling us the truth? And so a group of media organizations and other organizations, such as the First Amendment Foundation, went to court and asked for access to the external video, security video, that showed where the law enforcement officers were and when they, where they were and when they were there. This was objective evidence. That allowed us to say, okay, you need to be held accountable because you didn't respond appropriately. That's the point of our laws, to be able to oversee our government and hold it accountable.
Right.
And in that Parkland case, where we were able to get the security video, I think sort of epitomizes the importance of access to government information.
And let me look at another case, this one up in Tallahassee. This one has to deal with the Tallahassee City Commission. They're hiring a new city manager. And so really briefly, just describe what's happening there, because, you know, the any conversations about a public official that's going to be hired for a job has to be open, and any of those meetings have to be open. What's happening right now in Tallahassee?
Well, what happened originally, the former city manager, Rick Fernandez, had to resign after he denied a public records request for text messages. He claimed he had no records. There were no records responsive to the request. He had asked a lobbyist for the city for some very expensive football tickets, which was a violation, potential violation of ethics, but then got caught flat-footed when a reporter had requested the text messages. He said he didn't have any, and the reporter was able to get those text messages from another source, showing that the city manager had lied about this interaction. Those text messages were public record. So he resigned, and now the city is hiring a replacement. The Sunshine Law, the open meetings law, applies to any interviews of candidates if the city commission has to approve their hiring. In other words, if the city manager could hire a part-time clerk and didn't have to seek city commission approval, Sunshine Law wouldn't apply.
And real quickly, there's something mm-hmm. interesting here, because you talk about text messages, and I wondered, how does the Sunshine Law apply to text messages or email that are being sent on a private email, not a work email?
Well, that's what happened in Mr. Fernandez's case. If it meets the definition of a public record, in other words, it relates to public business, it is a public record subject to disclosure. The law does not prohibit public officials or government employees from using personal communication devices to communicate about public business. But even if it's sent from a private email account or your personal communication device, you're using your personal cell phone number to text, if it's a public record, it must be retained and maintained according to law, and you must provide access to it.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't matter. It's just sometimes harder for us to get those records, right? Because most people will make a public records request for all records received, sent or received on your .gov email account. I always make my request very broadly. All public record emails or all public record texts regardless of whether they were sent or received on a personal communication device.
We're talking with Barbara Peterson, president of the First Amendment Foundation. She's joining us via Skype. The First Amendment Foundation is hosting a number of Sunshine Law events, including this Wednesday at the Sun Sentinel. The derisive 2018 event with Dave Barry and Carl Hyacin is tomorrow night, and we'll also dive into issues of government transparency. Again, that is open to the public. There is an entry fee, but again, open to the public. You know, one of the interesting things, Barbara, too, is about when it comes to getting public records, when you put in a request for those records, that they're likely going to be fees involved in trying to get that information. What does the law say about how much you could be charged for those documents?
Well, unfortunately, the fee provision, there are two fee provisions under the public records law. One is for the cost of copying. That's not the problem for the most part. The problem is the second one, the extensive use provision that gives a great deal of latitude, too much latitude to my way of thinking, to the agency in determining how much they are going to charge you to obtain copies of the records you've requested. The extensive use fee allows an agency to charge for personnel time. And I have seen fees just this week. A woman contacted me. She was trying to get emails. I think it was going to cost her, if I'm not mistaken, just over $2,000 to get access to roughly 5,000 emails. They were charging her for the cost of reading each email to ensure that there was no exempt information in it. A reporter I talked to this past week was having very similar problems, although the cost was much higher. The woman was being charged $19.95 an hour for the person to look at the records. The reporter was being charged $79.95 for the same type of review, reading emails. So there's a lot of disparity. The fees can be outrageous. And the law says that the extensive use fee must be reasonable and must be based on actual costs incurred.
And so, yeah, you say reasonable. I've heard different stories, too, about, you know, just trying to get a hold of documents or emails that could cost thousands of dollars. It almost seems, I'm just making this observation. It almost seems like it's just a way people are trying to find to not get you information because if they put it out of reach. But how do they determine that? How do they determine how much they should charge for how long I'm going to have my clerk look through emails?
Well, that's the problem. So, yes, you're absolutely right. In some cases, they just don't want you to have them. There was a reporter I was working with in Southeast Florida. He got a bill for $3.5 million.
What?
For access. That's the most extreme. $3.5 million, and it was going to take the agency 7 years to fill the public records request. This was email correspondence. I think that's one problem. That's more rare, however, that they just don't want you to have it. Sometimes they just don't want to be bothered. But the bigger problem is they're not using sort of common sense. They're not doing a particularly good job of storing their email. You know, when things were in paper, everything was in a file cabinet. You'd have a file that said correspondence 2016 to 2017. You'd open that drawer and there's your correspondence. Now, when everything's electronic, I don't know that agencies are doing such a good job of filing, for one thing. Everybody emails all the time. So there's a lot more correspondence than there used to be. And they're not using readily available technology software that help them archive and store and retrieve public records and in electronic formats and even redact exempt information automatically. They're not using those because there's no incentive so long as they can pass the costs along to us.
Again, talking with Barbara Peterson, president of the First Amendment Foundation, joining us via Skype. The First Amendment Foundation hosting a number of Sunshine Law events, including this Wednesday at the Sun Sentinel. And as you heard, we had we've been playing the piece throughout the weekend. The Derisive 2018 event is with Dave Barry and Carl Hyacin. That's tomorrow night. We'll have information up on our website, WLRN.org. Barbara Peterson, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much for enlightening us on the fact that our state does have such open laws.
Thank you very much, and I encourage everyone to go to Derision 2018 Tuesday night, and then our Sunshine Seminar on Wednesday morning.
Fantastic. Barbara, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.